6 minutes past 3. It's Cambridge 105 Radio. Wednesday afternoon, Neil here, back from his holidays, playing Martin McCutcheon and Any Sign of Life. And it's a great pleasure to welcome into the studio now my studio guests for this afternoon. I've got Hannah Johnson. She's a contentious probate lawyer. We would find solicitors. Crikey. And Martin Collier, who is with Fenner's Chambers. You're a barrister, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Okay, let's get the elephant in the room out of the way first of all. What's the difference between a solicitor and a barrister, for those of us who don't know?
Well, I usually say that the client will go to a solicitor in the first instance and will probably have the most sort of long-standing relationship with a solicitor. And perhaps at a later stage, a barrister might become involved. And we particularly, as solicitors, will instruct barristers to represent our clients at hearings and also to provide specialist advice in areas.
Is that kind of how you see it, Martin?
Yes, I often use the analogy between a general practitioner and a surgeon.
Right.
If you've got a medical problem, you go to your GP, and 9 times out of 10, he or she will be able to sort you out. But it may be that it's a condition that needs to be referred to a consultant, a specialist, either for specialist advice or possibly for surgery. And that's the kind of difference between solicitors and barristers.
Okay, all right. Now, you're in this afternoon to talk about contested probates, contentious probate. What exactly are we talking about there?
We're talking about all manner of disputes that arise out of the administration of estates. Can often be regarding wills, or where there is no will, the operation of the intestacy rules, which apply where somebody passes away without leaving a will, and all sorts of difficulties that arise from situations where an estate's being distributed.
Right, so we've had this. We've had you guys in before talking about the importance of making a will. And are we instantly in that ground now, where life can be very difficult and battles can break out if there isn't a will?
It's very important to make a will, and often people will say, well, there's no point in making a will if it can be challenged. But there definitely is importance in making a will. The will is the starting point, and the courts are very keen to uphold the principle of testamentary freedom in England and Wales, which is really the principle that we can generally leave our estates to whoever we want, whether that be to our children or to charity. But then the court does have a role to step in and can vary the distribution of an estate in certain circumstances.
So if somebody has done the usual trick, which is leave all their money to the cat's home, that's the sort of thing where the family could step in and go, whoa, just a minute, she wasn't thinking, or he wasn't thinking this quite straight at the time, or would they not stand a chance?
I think there are two angles to this. The family might say, well, this will isn't a valid will, because, for example, the will maker either lack capacity, they weren't in their right mind, to put it in layman's terms, or perhaps they were put under improper, excessive influence, they were bullied into making that will, and therefore it's not a valid will. Or the other way that they might approach it would be to say, OK, this is a valid will, but this individual left, shall we say, a spouse and minor children who are dependent on him, and he's made no proper provision for them. And then, even though it is a valid will, those dependent members of his family could go to the court and say, we need reasonable financial provision out of this will to maintain us and to keep us.
And is this typically the sort of thing you see? Where people aren't in a will or feel that they've been undercut?
Yes, or where a will has been changed quite not that long prior to somebody passing away. So you can look at the will-making history and to see whether there's been a change that's been prompted by some involvement from somebody else, as Martin refers to. That's quite common.
I mean, usually if people are happy with wills, of course, they're very happy with them.
Yes.
They don't go and see lawyers.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong in principle, as a matter of law, in persuading somebody to change their will. To go to your elderly aunt and say, look here, auntie, don't leave it all to the cat's home, leave it all to me. That of itself is not improper. What is improper, and what makes the will invalid, is to put such pressure on somebody that they feel they have to do it, even though it's against what they really feel. And that's quite a high hurdle to cross. To have a will set aside on the grounds of undue influence is quite tough.
Well, especially because the person who was under that pressure, by nature of the fact, isn't around anymore, isn't it?
That's exactly so. And, of course, a will is a very formal document. You know, it's in writing, it's signed, it's witnessed by two witnesses. And as Hannah says, the courts like to uphold wills if they can. It does happen. Sometimes wills are set aside for that reason, but you need some pretty good evidence that there's been something really improper going on that stops that will being a true reflection of the will maker's intention.
So is that what happens when someone comes to you with a case? They say, look, this is where we're at. Obviously, if they're coming to you, they can't resolve this dispute in an amicable way between themselves. They're not sitting around the dining room table with a cup of coffee. Somebody is coming to you saying, we need help on this one. How do you go about just looking into the case and deciding what route to take?
We need to apply the facts to the law, really, and really cut down to whether or not there is any evidence which would support a successful challenge to validity, because it is very, very difficult, and that's part of a solicitor's role, to cut through cases that are not just unfair, or people expect to benefit and they're not benefiting, because that's not going to go very far. And a solicitor should never encourage a challenge purely based on someone's dissatisfaction. So we have to be, you know, I have to give very strong advice sometimes that, no, there is no evidence here. There is no ground. You know, I don't think you should pursue this action. And that is difficult. But then sometimes there will be good evidence to raise at least a doubt as to validity, as to whether or not this was really what this person wanted to do with their money.
So on an average, I'm not sure if you'd have those sort of numbers to hand, but on an average number of cases in an average month, what sort of percentage would you actually turn around and say, sorry, there's not much we can do?
Ooh, I'm not sure really.
Does it tend to be the rule or does it tend to be the exception?
A successful challenge to validity would tend to be more of an exception than a rule,
right?
Certainly.
That's really interesting, Martin. Do you tend to, because you're seeing it, as you say, at the surgeon's end of it, you're having to really do the diagnosis on this.
I think that's right. I think a successful challenge on the grounds of undue influence or incapacity, someone not being in their right mind to make a will, that's quite rare. But there are quite a few cases that get launched and the litigation process starts.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to go all the way through to the end.
Right, so this is brinkmanship, is it?
There's an element of brinkmanship, but the courts are very keen to encourage people to mediate with a trained mediator to work between them, particularly in cases where you have families at loggerheads with each other, because whatever happens in the legal proceedings, you know, families get torn apart by this sort of argument.
I can imagine.
And trying to do a deal has all kinds of advantages, both from a personal point of view, from a family point of view, but also from a commercial point of view, because one of the tales I often tell to clients of mine is going to trial is like going to the races. It's a day out. It can be a bit of a spectacle. But don't count on coming home with more money in your pocket than you set off with.
Right.
Because however strong your case is, it is still a gamble. If your lawyers say to you, you're definitely going to win, then I would raise a few eyebrows. But even if they say, you're 80% likely to win, which is pretty high, you're still 20% likely to lose.
Mm.
And if you're a sporting gentleman, that's not very long odds.
No.
So it is always a gamble. And it is unbelievably expensive.
I was going to say, that's one of the things presumably we are, if we're talking
stressful
barristers, it can be, a lot of hours, a lot of work, and quite expensive to do. So
absolutely. And it's a risk for everybody that gets involved in litigation, because the general rule is that the loser pays the winner's costs.
Right.
So you have to always bear that in mind, that if you lose, you're not only losing what you're claiming and your own costs, but you're probably going to have a costs order against you for your opponent's costs, which is a good principle to bear in mind when you're considering the possibility of settling a case, which we always hope.
It's a Pyrrhic victory sort of thing, isn't it? Jarndyce versus Jarndyce is the one, isn't it?
Jarndyce and Jarndyce is the famous one from Bleak House, Dickens's novel. And although, obviously, Dickens egged it on a bit for a literary license. There's a lot in that.
Yes.
And it's very easy with what we might call a modest estate. Let's say somebody, they die, they have a house that's free of mortgage. Well, if it's a house in Cambridge, that's not an insignificant sum of money. Maybe they've got a bit of savings. Let's say they have net £400,000, shall we say, which by most people's standards is a lot of money. You could get through a quarter of that quite comfortably.
Really?
If you're not careful. Both sides cost.
Absolutely.
My goodness me. All right, so when we say, is it expensive to challenge will? Yes, it is, and think before you do it in that case. What other things should people watch out for? What sort of myths? Because you get these people down the pub. Everyone's an expert, don't you? They go, I'll tell you what you want to do. You want to have a go at that, mate. You should be in that will. You want to challenge that. What other sort of myths surrounding this?
One myth is that there's such a thing as a common law marriage. I think that that's something that not only is relevant to contentious probate, but other areas of law. I mean, there is no such thing in law as a common law marriage.
So a couple living together with a will or without a will?
Well, with a will,
it's okay.
Fine,
but without a will, under common law, there's no. It's always, it'll just go to her.
No, I mean, an unmarried partner, if his or her partner dies, will have very little entitlement to deal with the estate at all.
Mm. The best that could be done, provided they'd be living together for at least 2 years, is that the remaining partner could bring a claim under the Inheritance Act, which I touched on before, where dependents and family members can sometimes make a claim against the estate. He or she could make a claim against the estate saying, I was this individual's long-term partner, and I've been left high and dry. But the remedy they will get is only to have such financial provision as is reasonable for their maintenance.
Right.
So it wouldn't necessarily be the whole lot. It might be a lot less than they think is right and proper. And the moral of the story is, A, always make a will, and B, if you're living with someone to whom you're not legally married, definitely make a will.
Yes.
And talk to your partner about it and what you're going to do. I mean, Hannah's absolutely right, and incidentally, that was the answer I was going to give to your question. There hasn't been such a thing as a common law marriage in England since, well, at least about 1750, and probably not since the Reformation. And yet somehow the public doesn't seem to have forgotten about it.
This is this whole myth thing, isn't it? Everyone assumes, oh, yeah, once you've lived together for X and they're entitled to this, they're entitled. And that's not the case.
No.
So we are talking definitely make a will. Are you seeing an increase in this? I guess people are more savvy about all this nowadays, and wills are perhaps a little bit more complicated. People seem to be financially a bit more astute, aren't they? People have got fingers in pies nowadays.
Yes, and I think it's a combination also of two social phenomena. I mean, one phenomenon is that a lot of people from the generation that are passing away now are the first people in their family to have capital. Perhaps they did well in the 60s and bought their own homes. Perhaps they bought council houses in the 80s.
Yeah.
And they've had something that their parents and grandparents never had, which is some capital. And it's also a generation which, again, because of social changes, perhaps they got divorced in their 40s and then remarried, or perhaps lived with somebody without being married. And so you've got a second wife or a cohabitant.
Yes.
And there are stepchildren or quasi-stepchildren of the cohabitant, if you see what I'm getting
at. Yeah, I'm with you.
On both sides. And, of course, the potential there for disputes and for things to go horribly wrong is substantial.
Yeah.
So there's more to argue about, and you've got a much more fluid family structure within which to argue it.
This is really where you do need it. Well, I was going to say, normally we say, well, this is where you should always seek the advice of a solicitor. Actually, what we're saying is sort it out first if you can, isn't it? We get round that dining room table. Sort it out if you can. But if you really can't, you are going to need a solicitor again, aren't you, on this one? Because the law seems to be quite unclear, or clear only to those who know what they're talking about.
Bearing in mind that if you've got your own home and it's free of mortgage, you're talking about, on any view, a six-figure sum these days. It's really worthwhile going to get some professional advice about that.
Yeah, because the tax man can come wandering along like there's no tomorrow. That must be a field day for them.
There are also the inheritance tax implications to it. Perhaps not as much now with married couples as it was a few years ago, but it's still very much there. If somebody came along and gave you £250,000, most people would say, I'm going to take some advice before I decide what to do with that.
Yes.
If you have a house worth £250,000, which is not a big house in Cambridge, then you really ought to have think quite hard about getting professional advice before you decide how that's going to be dealt with after you die.
Okay. But, I mean, again, coming back to the point of it as well, is if you've got a will, and if you are one of those people who is perhaps the head of one of these quite disparate families that we're now talking about, as you say, with ex-wives and ex-husbands and stepchildren, it's make sure that will is fit for purpose is has got to be a thing. Is it make sure what's in it is what you mean to be in it.
Well, absolutely. And if a will is professionally prepared by a firm of solicitors, then there will be documentation that goes alongside that will. So one of the first things I will look into when I'm trying to investigate the validity of a will be the solicitor's file relating to that will, which will include things like an attendance note when the solicitor took instructions for the will. There might be a letter of wishes that goes alongside the will explaining the person's reasons for what they are doing. And if you have like a homemade will, then there won't be that documentation available. So there will be a lack of evidence as to intention. So that's the benefit, really, of having a professionally prepared will to rely on.
Well, there you go. You keep hearing it. I was away on holiday and there was a bit of a chat by the pool. And I couldn't believe that of all of them, there was only, I think, and about six people, two had made wills for, hadn't. Really, really can't be doing that. It's crazy. It's madness. Doesn't make you die any quicker, does it? Just promise me that. It doesn't make you die any quicker, does it?
I did come across an individual who said that he didn't want to make a will because if it made a will, that meant he was going to die. And I said, I've got news for you, chum. You are going to die.
Yeah.
It's one thing that none of us can avoid.
Yeah, there we are. You heard it first. Well, there we are. Thank you very much indeed to Hannah Johnson from Woodfines and to Martin Collier from Fenner's Chambers. If you want to find out more, woodfines.co.uk and give them a ring there. Lovely to speak to you this afternoon. Interesting subject and food for thought for many of our audience, methinks.